Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Mobilize podcast. I'm David from Mobilize. Today, I'm going to be speaking to Lazola from Fossil Free South Africa. But with that said, I'm going to jump straight in and hand over to Lazola to introduce herself. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Thank you, David, for having me. My name is Lazola Kati. I am the campaign manager for the Fossil Ad Ban campaign and the Fossil Free South Africa.
Thanks so much. All right. So I think we're going to get into a few different topics today. But what I'd really like to start with is I want to know a little bit about you, Lazola. Can you tell me your background, the work you do in Fossil Free South Africa, the work you've done on this campaign, just a sort of a high level overview of that?
Awesome. So I'm Lazola Kati, born and bred in the Eastern Cape. I went to Rhodes University, studied political and international relations. It's always been my passion to go into policy making, but from a bottom-up approach. I started out working in the gender sector, women empowerment, sexual reproductive health rights. And then I went to the access information sector, stayed for quite a long time, ended up specializing in misinformation in policy. And I then kind of took those skills and that knowledge into climate change, right? And specifically now greenwashing, right? And I work at Fossil Free South Africa, which is an organization that fights to end the investment into fossil fuels and to end the influence industry that is held or owned by fossil fuel companies in the advertising industry. So we tackle PR and advertising by fossil fuel companies. We try and, for lack of a better word, bust the myths. And I then am the manager for the Fossil Ad Ban campaign, which is a campaign that was founded to advocate for a fossil fuel advertising ban in South Africa. It's a mouthful, but the point to the campaign is to actually stop fossil fuel companies from making environmental claims. And that is also to tackle greenwashing within the country. And also, when you tackle greenwashing, you basically stop the social licensing that is given to fossil fuel companies because of the way that they sort of kind of present themselves. And that's also increasing extractivism, right? So basically, that's what the Fossil Ad Ban campaign is out to do.
Cool. No, thank you. I think it's a good summary of it. There were a few interesting terms there. And I'm going to be a bit of an advocate for some of the listeners who are less maybe familiar with some of the language. So could you define a few things for me quickly? So you mentioned about a big thing you're trying to tackle is the environmental claims made by fossil fuel companies. Do you want to just define what that is quickly?
Cool. So what we have seen when it comes to climate change is that when climate change was first introduced, this was back in the 70s, actually, scientists came up and said, the globe is warming up. And a lot of fossil fuel companies basically did not kind of believe it. And there was a lot of skepticism. Obviously, the scientists brought up the scientific evidence. And then what ended up happening is that companies like the Total Energies understood this well into the 80s, when scientists actually came out and said, the work that you're doing, which is the extraction and manipulation of minerals into oil, your gas, and petroleum, is actually warming up the globe, right? And then we spent decades where fossil fuel companies like Total Energies were on denialist campaigns. And if you read the report, we have a whole page and some of the adverts that they put out that just prove or try and make the consumer believe that global warming is actually that we exist. And it was only in the 90s. When fossil fuel companies came out and said, actually, global warming is a real thing and climate change is a real thing, right? So what it is that when we say environmental claims is now fossil fuel companies coming with a different fact. They now can't say climate change does not exist. So what they try to do is to position themselves as people that support the fight against climate change. Now, a good example of environmental claims is a Total energy saying we are net zero, or we are working around the clock to have our technology sort of create renewable energy. Or a good one that they put all of their social media is them saying that they are funding South Africa's renewable energy market. Yeah. But there's a lot. So these are the types of environmental claims. And on the Fossil Ad Ban campaign launched South Africa's first greenwashing complaint through the Advertising Regulatory Body of South Africa last year. This is what we were tackling.
Okay.
Because Total Energies had an advert up. And the advert was basically speaking about their collaboration with the South African National Park, SANParks. The partnership spent over 60 years. And in the advert, they said, and this is why we are for environmental protection and sustainable development. That is greenwashing. Because Total Energy's day-to-day work is not in environmental protection or sustainable development. That is a small partnership that they have nurtured for this long, but their day-to-day, their profits, and their majority of their investment goes into what? Fossil fuel extraction. They're an oil company.
So if I'm to understand, like trying to make sense of what you're saying, it's what you really, there's this thing with these companies, and Total being a very good example of it, 90% of their work is getting fossil fuels out the ground and selling it to people. Well, yet 90% of their advertising is about everything else they do that's not to do with fossil fuels. So they like to pretend their business is about saving national parks or the renewable energy that they spend a little bit of money on. But really, it's to hide all the big money they're spending destroying the world, in a sense.
Exactly. And that's what we are saying needs to be exposed. And that's what we're saying is irresponsible advertising. That's why we're saying it's not enough to educate people on what greenwashing is. But we need policies. Just like the tobacco ban and the harmful elements that came up in the tobacco ban, we need the same kind of restrictions. Because now what ends up happening is that when you look at it, even extends to imagery, like we stipulated in the report. The imagery that they put up does not let you know that, for instance, Total Energies is now Total Energies and no longer Total. And that tells you they responded to the shift in climate change. They responded to the shift in energy consciousness, right? And then number two, their adverts are very much techno salvation. You see the energy, the Total Energy branding colors with a scientist and a mom and a child doing homework. They're nurturing our lived experiences and they're showing us that we're a part of that. But in reality, Total Energies owns 62% stake in the EACOP project. That is the largest oil pipeline that is currently being built through Uganda. It has displaced thousands of homes. It has actually displaced thousands of farmers and has actually really kind of created a huge environmental degradation, right? There are communities that are protesting as we speak. Communities and organizations that are being arrested for trying to go against the EACOP project, right? So these are the two crushing images.
Yes. Well, there's something very interesting about what you're describing there, and I'm so fascinated to pick your brain on this. So with that pipeline, I imagine as well, when they're arguing about why we need to build this pipeline, I imagine they're talking about a decades-long investment. So not only is in and of itself potentially unethical or, you know, just not good for the environment, not good for people living in that environment, but they're actually saying, well, we want to continue to move oil through this pipeline for the next five decades, potentially. I'm not sure. And I imagine they'll have that in a report, but then what they say is quite different.
Exactly. And this is the thing is that, again, another angle to greenwashing, which we highlight in the report, is this idea that fossil fuel companies position themselves as though they're investing in the future and though they're investing in the prosperity of communities, governments, and society. And EACOP is a big example of that because it was sold as though it's Africa's first oil pipeline and it is the biggest pipeline in the world. So you can imagine the kind of propaganda that is sold to the president of Uganda, to the community of Uganda. What is not being spoken about enough is the amount of families that have to be moved out of the way to put that pipeline in.
So it's, what's interesting is it's not only an argument about the environmental harm. Like, you know, we need to take climate change very seriously. I think what people are already experiencing the harms of climate change. Mm-hmm. But there's also just fundamental industrial harm happening here, in that people aren't being respected. It reminds me of some of the stuff on sort of this around Olobeni with the mining stuff there, where it's like, okay, so we're just going to make a titanium mine and just destroy your ancestral graves, and you'll just lose all of that. So, so there's this human element to it as well, is what I'm hearing.
100%, there is. And I mean, another example that's closer to home, last year, we went to the province of Mpumalanga, right? And Mpumalanga has been declared globally as one of the top three greenhouse gas hotspots. That is, like, it's a small province, but it is globally one of the greenhouse gas hotspots. And this means globally, it's one of the top three places that that emits greenhouse gases into the air. And because, and the reason for that is because specifically the community we went to is... the community is surrounded by over 42 mines, and the majority of them coal mines, right? Now, the burden of the human element here is that these mines are continuously coming in. They are mining coal, and there's a coal production happening there. But the stories that we heard from actual community members is that, one, a lot of these mines open, 3 months later, they're gone. Nobody's covering up the mines.
That quick?
Nobody knows how the mines got permits. Nobody knows. The community members know nothing, right? Secondly, as we highlighted with the ECOP project, there is a loss of heritage land rights that's happening consistently because Mpumalanga is predominantly ruled by chiefs. So you find that when these fossil fuel companies come in, there are side conversations that are being had to a point where even the village chiefs lose control and ultimately lose land. And this means that the community members are losing land. And because Mpumalanga is predominantly an agricultural province, there's a lot of livelihood. There's a lot of the economic sustainability that comes from the agricultural land. We actually did a whole documentary series on that, and it's on our YouTube page and on our socials on the Fossil Ad Land pages. Yeah,
we must make sure we link to that in the description below so that viewers and listeners can also see it. What I really like about also what you're talking about is it reminds me of lots of stuff I've seen before. I remember like 5 years ago, like being part of the presidential debates in America, something called the Keystone XL pipeline in America, which was very similar to what you're describing, but obviously through the USA. And the thing that really sticks out to me is there's not that level of focus in South Africa. Like, I can't think of a single political campaign which has really spoken about the harms of these developments. And when I think of your report, and what's, I think, so powerful about it is that it's actually doing a really qualitative review of South Africa's experience. Like, when you're talking about Total, the first thing that came to my mind was that they were the ones responsible for finding those... Well, they were the ones that went and found those large gas deposits off our coast and want to go and exploit them. And I know there's huge amounts of contestation about that. I think of Exxaro's work where, it was a while ago, so I'm struggling to remember it. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. I think it was about 5 to 10 years ago. And they did a campaign where they were talking about how they were going to go to net zero by electrifying their coal mining. So no, we must ignore the emissions from the coal itself. But, you know, all their trucks are going to be electric and they're going to offset any carbon emission in the process of mining. So, and I think that that 3-week thing you talked about, it's these are very South African problems that I think South Africans aren't aware of. And while some South Africans would say, no, it's fine, we need the jobs, we need the development. Well, you're talking about a 3-week mining exercise. Okay, so we're going to destroy the water table, we're going to destroy the environment, we're going to destroy the long-term income. And someone we don't know is probably going to get very rich while a whole bunch of people in the area get poor.
Exactly. And the other thing is that there's this idea, again, born of greenwashing, that there are more jobs in coal mining than renewable energy. That's not true. That's a fallacy, right? There are whole economies standing in the West on renewable energy, right? And number two, there's this idea that when these mining companies or other petroleum and oil companies go into communities, they come in and they say, we will create jobs, and that's what happens. That is not what happens. It's also in the documentary where people realize that these companies come, they have meetings with certain individuals, not even in municipal offices, and they get given whatever looks like a permit, they start mining. They actually don't employ community members. Community members still remain unemployed. They employ random people that are from outside of that community. Right? That's the first.
So it's not even benefiting the community in which it's happening. So they're destroying the land and giving the people nothing, except for some arbitrary leader, which for some reason got a lovely car out of the whole deal. That sort of situation.
Exactly. And these are the pitfalls and gaps that already exist in our economy, which is corruption. And the fact that, and this is why you find communities and activists that actually try and go to court and stop permits being handed out are so pivotal to the movement when it comes to climate change. And the other reason greenwashing is so important, the support is so pivotal, is that people begin to understand what fossil fuel companies are coming to say in South Africa. Because on our televisions, on our radio stations, on the internet, they say they care. They say they care about humanity. They say they care about us and our future. But what's actually happening on the ground is completely different, right? People are experiencing fossil fuel companies making endless promises of employment and a better future. But what they're actually ending up with is unemployment. Because in Mpumalanga, there was projects that were being run from an agricultural perspective. But because of the presence of the coal mining, there was a lot of dirty water that ended up interrupting a lot of agricultural projects. Thousands of people lost their jobs. We had them at the workshop wearing their uniforms, still saying we're unemployed because of this, you know? And because of, at the FAB campaign, we always say that we need to have deeper conversations with everyone and not just experts and scientists and academics.
Yeah.
Because people actually don't know, because we use buzzwords like net zero, greenwashing, 1.5 degrees Celsius and all of that. But we need to deconstruct this. And this is what the report does. So for instance, in the report, one of the bigger statistics that we shared is that we collected data over just a 2-month period of how much greenwashing was perpetuated by the top 6 petroleum companies in the country. And what we also shared was how much they spent. These people spent over 15 million rand on ads, on radio, on TV, and on social media, right? And that amount of money, you're trying to tell me, could not be invested in actual renewable energy or in real sort of reparations and fixing what it is that they have learned.
What I really like about what you just started to touch on too, and now this makes me want to really start diving into the report, is sure, you're saying let's ban fossil fuel ads and because they're inherently full of disinformation. But you're also saying this is what that money could actually do. Like, instead of pretending they're doing more of the good stuff than they are, they could just do more of the good stuff and less of the bad stuff.
Exactly. It's not a situation of we can't afford it or it's not part of our strategy. No, these fossil fuel companies are choosing to invest millions into making the consumer believe that by continuing to support petroleum companies and governments also, we must never exclude governments because they're also more of a victim of the circumstance, a victim of greenwashing, because there's not a lot of content or education on this already. Right? This is at an information level. But the governments at the same time are not necessarily blind to the harmful aspects of climate change and continue to allow for further deals, further permits, more extractivism. Just last year, the Fossil Ad Ban campaign was a part of a march against Africa Energy Week, specifically because there is where the conversations are had about more permits being given out to fossil fuel companies, more business, and even conversations on, you know, the biggest conversation right now, the greenwashing network, is how gas is being framed as a natural. I laugh, but it's actually being framed as a natural resource, and it's also being framed as the natural progression and a way to renewable energy, right? And
yeah,
that Africa Energy Week is where these conversations are had. Africa Energy Week is where governments, banks, big rich people come in and they sit down and they say, okay, it's the next scramble for Africa. It really is.
I hear you. I really like the way you were framing that about the natural gas thing, because the fact that it's called, there's a really exceptional video by a YouTube channel called Climate Towns, where they look at the gas propaganda in America about like, now we're cooking with gas is one of the lines, right? Like this idea that now we're doing something good, so we're cooking with gas. And the renaming it from LPG or whatever we would call it to natural gas. Sounds great. You know, my inherent response to that would be something like, well, technically so is cyanide's also natural. So is arsenic. These are naturally occurring things. We don't want them. They're poison. So, and there's a video I'd like to really point our audience to as well that we did in our energy comms campaign about 2 years ago. What was it, our climate comms? I will share it. But it literally talks about how we're burning the remains of dinosaurs and old fern forests and all that sort of stuff. So it's natural, but it's actually, that's not a good thing just because something is naturally occurring. And it's also really not sustainable, even if we weren't to ignore the whole climate thing, like what you just described with damaging communities. Okay, so we made a couple of bucks from extracting this coal, but we've destroyed 50 years of commerce from grazing fields and growing local crops or tourism. If I think of some of those, thinking back to Molobeni, I don't know how many of our listeners have been there, but it's a really beautiful place. And if you did large-scale mining, you'd go from a beautiful tourist location or somewhere people can just connect with themselves to an industrial wasteland. It would look like kind of south of Joburg with all those giant mine dumps.
100%.
So you touched on it by saying, you know, the money that Total spent on this campaign, the 15 million rand, that could have been spent on developmental work. That could have been spent on investing in sustainable solutions, renewable energy. There's a million and one things that could have been spent on. It could have been a grant to Sand Parks without all the strings attached potentially as well, right? So the question I have is, what is the harm of greenwashing? Because, yeah, I think it's easy to recognize that it's ethically wrong and morally dubious or whatever. But what is actually the harm of greenwashing? What does it do that damages our society?
Sure. So I'll give you an example, right? And I'm going to touch on what we spoke about earlier. You saw the amount of propaganda and the push for gas, right? And the renaming it to liquefied natural gas and making it the cool kid on the block that will help us get to renewables energy, right? Now, if you check back globally, that is a PR tactic, right? They're soft launching liquefied natural gas before it gets into the country's energy mixes or before it gets actually used, right? Now, that was a long-standing PR campaign and advertising and kind of making people comfortable in saying that, okay, we're no longer pushing extracting oil and coal. We're now going to do natural gas. And you know what happened at the beginning of this year in South Africa? We included natural gas in our energy mix. And not many people said anything because it's natural gas, right? So these are the harms. Because the idea here is that natural gas apparently gives off less greenhouse gases than coal. That is true, but it still gives out a significant amount that still harms the environment, right? That's harm number
one. Something to also add on that, sorry to interrupt you, but I think also it's important for listeners and watchers to know that that's just the combusted gas, right? That's excluding leakages. So effectively, the molecule that's present in natural gas is methane. It's the same thing when you talk about cow burps I can't remember the number, but it's horrifically more harmful to the environment than CO2 is. And if I recall, there's also been a lot of studies on the fact that the leaking of gas through the extraction, through the transportation, is grossly understated. Is that right?
It is. That is true.
Okay.
That is true. So the point of contention is the leaking. The point of contention is the storage. Okay. There's a lot of the fossil fuel companies are speaking about storing the gas and storage projects. But the truth of the matter is it does not make it any less harmful. The extraction, the transportation is enough to cause the harm. It is extraordinarily high, and it is something the planet cannot take. And what we must also understand is that when we talk about climate change, we're not only talking about the environment. I'm talking about a UKZN study that came out last year through the SADC. It was also broadcast, where it was actually proven through science that in the hottest regions of KZN, where climate change really affects people, we've actually had an increase in miscarriages because of how hot it is. Right?
I hadn't heard that. Interesting.
Right?
Like, I've heard about things like heart attacks and stuff from high humidity and heat, but I hadn't actually heard about miscarriages. So there's actually, beyond the stuff that might be common knowledge for people, there's a lot of these unknown effects that happen.
There's definitely a lot of the unknown effects. I mean, there's this study, and there's also different aspects of the fact that when these mining companies come in, there's the labor aspect to it as well. Because again, I'll go back to Malang. I want to go back to places we're familiar with, but we haven't had heard their stories, right? We go back to Mpumalanga, where there's a random call. And this is how it literally happens. There's a random call. Someone comes through the street and says, there's jobs at so-and-so place. People go there.
Yes.
They line up. They say, we only want the men. We don't want the women. Those men spend 3 months or 3 weeks of their lives shoveling through coal without the proper gear. They don't have the headgear. All they have is a mask. They're breathing in their CO2 for the entire shift. Right, that they're working in. And then they're gone and done. The mine closes down very abruptly in 3 weeks or 3 months. Nobody gets paid. People are dying of respiratory issues. Women and children are left without husbands and fathers. Communities are left without fathers and male figures. What does that include? Now we have high unemployment rates skyrocketing again. These are the serious effects of the perpetuation of climate change. It's not just about the environment. There are real people that are experiencing. We've got the KZN floods. The KZN floods are not just caused by the sea being angry or the rains being heavy. That is climate change affecting the environment. And what do we have as a result of the KZN floods? People being displaced, economies being disrupted, children being out of their homes, mothers, fathers, families, completely being eroded and moved out of their places. The victims of the KZN floods are still living in holes to this day. They're still living in large holes with donated blankets, crappy food, and no access to real services, which is a violation of their human rights. That's what climate change does.
Terrific.
Now, I want to go back to...
Please, Karen.
So I want to go back to your original question. What is the harm in greenwashing, right? Greenwashing makes us feel that these companies are not as harmful as they are. That's number one.
Okay.
They're hiding what it is that they actually do, right? They're hiding that as Total Energies, I own 62% of the ECOP plant that has displaced thousands of people, that has actually kind of created environmental vulnerabilities, right? They're hiding that. Because Total Energies comes to you and says, I'm investing in the future. They come to you and show you familiar images that make you feel like Total Energies is a part of my life. But it's the oil company. How is it a part of your life in the teeth of climate change, right? The harm here is that it creates social licensing and it makes it palatable for a Total Energies or a government official to come and say, we are giving land to Total Energies or there's a permit that has been passed to a Shell, to a BP, to a, I almost said Exxon, to different petroleum companies and oil, or Sasol, to come and further mine coal and oil, right? This coal, you need it for electricity, you need it for your livelihood, is actually them saying that we're going to continue to mine and we're going to continue to pay climate. You're going to continue dying from it, from different elements that we've listed before, right? Now, the social licensing is important because then there's no dissenting voice against fossil fuel companies.
Yes.
If a petroleum company comes through and they open a new petroleum company or they rebrand from Total to Total Energies, of the multiple court cases overseas on of greenwashing and environmental degradation, right? The social licensing then makes it palatable for the consumer to say, you know what? Climate change is not that bad. Total Energies invested $5 billion in $5 million in 2022. What is being omitted there is that Total Energies made $32.2 billion and invested a measly $5
million. Well, then this opens the obvious question. Where the hell did that money go?
It went
to where did the billions go?
It went to dividends payouts, and it went to further investment into oil and gas.
Now, I suppose the follow-up I'd have to that is, those dividends aren't going to South Africans. They aren't going to the Mpumalanga community that got screwed over by a bad development. It's going to Americans, right? It's going to Europeans. It's going to the global north. And, you know, is it just me or does it feel a little bit colonial? Like, you know, they come in here, they're taking our resources, profiting massively from it, and that profit doesn't stay with South Africans?
It doesn't. This is why there are better conversations being had in the climate sector on increased tax for reparations. Because we get squat.
Yes.
We don't get anything. And, I mean, we don't even get discounts on access to these fossil fuel companies. The petrol prices are through the roof, you know?
Exactly.
And this is why greenwashing is important. Because then, an advert is not just an advert. You are the consumer. You have the power, right? And they understand that. And they understand that a dissenting voice in a democratic country to say, we don't want fossil fuel companies is a big issue for them.
That's a very exciting point you brought up for me. So when you were saying there's this big underscore, which is that it actually stops us from being able to have a good, quality, honest conversation. Like,
it does.
You know, we could potentially have a conversation where we say, look, we don't have the solar fields yet. We don't have the wind farms we need yet. We don't have this energy yet. So maybe what we do is we spend a little bit of time with some of these fossil fuels because we don't want to have load shedding. We don't want to have power failures. But we can't even have an honest conversation about what we want to do because they're hiding the reality from us. Am I getting it right?
You're getting it right. We don't have the information, so we can't have the honest conversation. We don't know what's happening, but we're experiencing the byproduct of that. And one thing so that we can say, oh, but I'm not a victim of this. But we shared something on the report, right? These were six companies over a 2-month period that spent over 15 million rand on greenwashing. And they actually reached 30.5 million people. That's 30.5 million people exposed to greenwashing. This is not a small PR checklist.
One campaign.
Right? And this was over 2 months. And we didn't look at maybe 100 advertisements per petroleum company. It's not. It's a couple of...
2 months! 2 months!
They know that about...
Okay.
And they can come back and tell you that, you know, victims of KZN floods, you're fine. You're fine in a hole. The victims in Mpumalanga that have lost family members, you're fine. The agricultural degradation in this country is so high. And so many can you depend on it. A good example is Shell. Shell seismic surveys. There was a big campaign that was famous. I think it was about 2 years ago, right? Oceans Not Oil. And Shell kind of like switching to say they want to be mining, they want to get, and it's not, people seem to think that it's just about the fish and the biodiversity in the ocean, the need to save the fish. And yes, we do. They're very beautiful fish and they're very important to our biodiversity. But to the coastal community's livelihood, those people depend on the health of biodiversity in that ocean. They depend on the health of the ocean for their livelihood. We're talking about thousands of communities where if the biodiversity is interrupted, because Shell continued with that seismic survey anyway, we're talking about them losing jobs. We're talking about them losing food. We're talking about them losing homes. This is further displacement, more homeless people. And again, it's whose taxes that has to like fill all of this? It's still South African taxpayers' money. We get nothing from this.
Yeah, that's I think such a big point, right? Is that the other thing that greenwashing is doing here is it's making us think we're getting something that we're not. Right? Yeah. That fundamentally, this is going to literally the cartoon villains that we see overseas on TV sometimes, those billionaires, those ultra-wealthy investors, they're the ones making the money. We're taking the damage. We're also facing the horrors of climate change more because we don't. And when I say we, I'm actually talking quite specifically about the most low-income communities in South Africa, the most vulnerable. Because me, sitting in my home, I could have an air conditioner. You know, there's no flooding in my house. And if there's any South African likely to be invested, it's us in the middle or upper classes in South Africa. So there's really the story about this campaign is aimed at convincing the people that are being robbed that they're not being robbed, in a sense.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what greenwashing is, right? It's trying to hide theft. It's trying to hide a malicious theft of resources, money, time, life, safety, and dignity, actually, as well.
Heavy on dignity. One of the biggest things that, as a fossil advent campaign, we learned when we started going into the community is the dignity aspect. We were speaking a lot about the science. We were talking about the labor issues. We were talking about the lies, the misinformation. I mean, countries across the board from COVID-19 are passing laws on misinformation and disinformation, right? I don't think many people thought there's a lot of this, even in climate change. But what we learned when we got into the communities is the dignity aspect, how people just lose land rights. You're just losing your land. You don't know where to go. You don't know who to go to because the company was there for 3 months and it disappeared. And also, even if the company was still there, it is a multi-billion dollar or euro company. It is not based in South Africa. Total Energy's headquarters is in France. It is a French company. This is not a South African company. That's a whole different set of rules that you have to play by, right? We got used to the Americans. Now we need to deal with the French as well, right? So
never ends.
You know, it is safe. And this is why earlier I said it's the new scramble for Africa. Because they're just sitting around these expensive tables. And I say this because platforms like Africa Energy Week last year within South Africa, hosted in Cape Town. And each ticket, I think, was, if I'm correct, around 70,000 rand. So who do you invite it?
I'm pretty sure that's above what the average person in those areas earns per year, you know?
So it's not civil society. It's not vulnerable communities. It's not anyone normal who can take out 70,000 rand and say, I'm buying a ticket. I'll go. I want to go talk.
And also, I love that they do it in Cape Town, right? The city that's literally the furthest city away from where this extraction is happening in South Africa. The beautiful city, the amazing mountains, beautiful ocean. So they're not even anywhere. So yeah, technically it's the same country, but it's not actually near where this extractivism, this theft is taking place. It's actually it's like they went to a resort, a holiday town.
Exactly. And they don't get to face the realities of the deals that come out of the beginning. Like the whole thing around last year, the CEO, NJIU, came out because we had hosted a protest and it was a coalition of different organizations. Don't Gas Africa, Stop
Peacock,
also Free South Africa. There were many organizations. And we had actually released a statement to say, these types of platforms need to be more open to civil society and vulnerable communities. And this platform should not exist in the way that it exists, right? And the response from the CEO of the Africa Energy Chamber was a video basically calling climate change activism environmental panic. Yes, currently we're having panic attacks over climate change. It's not that deep. And the tagline was "Drill, baby, drill." That's what we got out of that.
I've seen some of that stuff. Yeah, comms. It's really good. I'd really recommend, once again, viewers go follow their channels on social media. It's not just like informing, it's also kind of fun the way they present stuff. They're really very impressive.
A good page also is politically aware. They do a lot of satirical.
Yes.
Videos. We collaborate.
Yes, no, definitely.
So if people also want kind of the more complex aspects of sports washing, greenwashing, which we highlight in the report, broken down, that's a good page to look at.
I feel bad for our producer. She's gonna have to go and like spend 20 minutes to an hour finding all these links that we're referencing and putting them in the description. Exactly. I think I see we're getting close to the end of our time, and there's one last thing I really wanted to touch on. So I really want to just encourage everyone who's listening to this. If the report is very accessible, it's written and designed really well to be read not by researchers and academics, but by people that are just interested in the stuff. So I would really, really encourage you to the audience to read this report. It's not unmanageable. But there's one thing is, I think we also need to think about the framing, is that it came out in March, correct?
It came out in February.
February, okay. Jeepers. Been a minute. And February 2025 happens to be the same year G20 is taking place in South Africa. So I wanted to hear from you, in relation to the findings of your research and in relation to this campaign, I know there's this big focus on South Africa appropriately, but is there also a focus on the international dialogue that's currently taking place? And what are your sort of thoughts on that?
Yeah. So there is definitely a focus for us on the global aspect as well. We do have global partners that we talk to collaborate with. Even with the report launch, we had the members that worked on the City of Hague Fossil Ad Ban, the Municipal Fossil Ad Ban, present to kind of present their challenges, how they pushed for a fossil ad ban, and kind of take us through the legal challenges that happened after that, right? So
yes,
for us, the conversation, and we do kind of incorporate it. What we need to understand is that globally, there is an understanding of the presence of greenwashing, and there is a pushback. And the UN Secretary General, there's a lovely quote that we have on the report by the UN Secretary General that actually pushes countries to start legislating and pushing for fossil ad ban. He says, have it as a policy. Because fossil fuel companies are responding to climate change through greenwashing, right? That is the conversation that's actually being had. And the other conversation, obviously, that has come up, especially through the American the freedom of expression, right? We can definitely get into that. But from a South African perspective, what the fossil ad ban is pushing to do is to have our own global South voice. It's very important when having conversations on climate change to not only hinge onto the global conversation. Otherwise, we are going to run the same risk of delaying decoloniality like we did with the previous conversations on politics and everything. This is why even the beginning of the report says, look at it, we are writing from a decolonization perspective. Because this idea of greenwashing, the PR tactics, climate change, and the acts that lead to climate change are a perpetuation of colonization, right? So what we are then saying through this report and through the work that we are doing and in G20 is that South Africa, there's a global conversation happening, but there is a conversation that we need to be having ourselves, because the majority of all of these European companies are operating in South Africa. South Africa is apparently the energy leak, right? We're getting all of these We're getting all of these fields. And the question is why? And we need to start having those conversations. Because greenwashing in the West, in France and in Germany and in the Netherlands, is different to the greenwashing we're experiencing in South Africa. These people are publishing efforts in the next to be more relatable to us, right? They are published.
I wish we had the budget to do that.
Right? That would be so great. Look at that.
They could give us 15 million rand to publish anti-greenwashing ads in Vernac. There we go.
Spread the love. At this point, it's our money.
That's right.
So what we're pushing for is for funding. It's for research. It's for data specifically. That's why the report is very data centered, but we present it in such a way that it's palatable to anyone. It reads like a magazine, you know. But we want our story, our statistics, our struggles as South Africans on the map as the point of departure in conversations like your G20 COP, UN conversations. We are providing our own conversations, right? Because if we are going to plug onto the global conversation, if we are going to be receivers of the global conversation, then the actual implications of climate change will never be heard.
I think that's on hell of a line to end on. I think I just want to really thank you for sharing with us today. It's really fascinating because communications is so central to how people see the world, understand the world, yet there's often more of a focus on the practical stuff happening on the ground without recognizing how the comms is facilitating it, allowing it, you know, allowing it to insidiously seep in. And I think you've really outlined it really well. And obviously the report goes into great detail on this. And for anyone who wants to be an activist around this issue, it's hugely intersectional. Is also a sense I've gotten from what you're describing, right? It relates to food security. It relates to disaster resilience, adaptation, mitigation. It's wonderfully complex. So I think to wrap up then, and thank you, Lizola, if people want to stay in touch with what Fossil Fuel South Africa is doing, the kind of campaigns you're working on, they want to participate in this campaign, what is the way they do that?
So currently we have a pledge. We have a pledge that's going around. We'll put the link, we'll share the link with you guys, where people, individuals, businesses, PR, advertising. We've actually got a couple of political parties that have actually signed this pledge as well, like the Good Party. Basically the pledge is stating that you are against fossil fuel advertising and you support for there to be a fossil ad ban in South Africa, right? And that's an important aspect because when you go to policy makers with numbers to say, listen, this many people from cutting across the board want for there to be a fossil fuel ad ban policy in the country, then it gives it life and it brings numbers into it. What we're trying to do is not just be pioneers of a thematic area. We are trying to make people understand why this is important and have people participate, right? So you can definitely read the report. We welcome emails. All of the contact details are on there. I'll share them. We welcome email responses to the report. We also welcome, so on our social media, fossil ad ban on Instagram. Yeah. And on Twitter as well, fossil ad ban. I'll share these links. People can definitely interact with the report and all of our events are usually posted up there. So if you ever feel like you want to attend on any of our events, they'll definitely be on our social media. We also have a website, www.fossiladband.co.za. All of our press statements, any additional data, intellectual stuff that we work on, research, events, is definitely there, along with our partner organizations as well. So that's for now, that's what people can definitely do. And we collaborate on events as well. We have had calls to come through, present your report, or rather talk us through what greenwashing is from a community perspective as well.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Lizola. I think that's I hope everyone enjoyed that and got something to learn from it. And work and can see how they can participate to, you know, bring about positive change, how they can be involved in these campaigns. But with that, thank you so much for joining me today. And I'm looking forward to hearing from you in future and seeing the rest of the work you guys are doing. It's really, really cool. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having us, David. I appreciate it.